Denise is going to introduce us to our trustees and take us through the ratification process. Denise?
Raise your hand.
Hi, thank you. And would you please make me co-chair so I can
It's already
share?
done.
Okay, cool. I am going to share my screen, and if somebody would just confirm that you can see it, then I'll make it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, slideshow. I did it. Okay. This is my first time to do both. So, hi, everyone. I'm Denise, an adult child. I'm the chair of the nominating committee, NomCom for short. And NomCom vets and nominates qualified candidates to the Board of Trustees. And this hour for ratification is to help you make an informed decision for when you cast your ratification vote on each trustee after the meeting today. So we have a lot packed into this hour, which will be divided into two parts. Oh, there we go. Sorry about that. Can't get good help these days. Let's see. So first, I will briefly share about why we need a board of trustees, the qualifications, and our vetting and nominating process. And then I'm going to be brief in section two, and so that there's time for panel discussion and time in the third session for a 15-minute Q&A. Actually, you've been hearing about the OPPM a whole lot, so I think you all know that the operating so everything that we do is laid out for us in the OPPM section two, appendix four. So I'll give you some key facts about our trustees. ACA is registered as a nonprofit corporation in the state of California and has specific legal status. There is a minimum of three trustees for ACA to exist as a nonprofit, and we can have as many as 20 trustees. ACA trustees have a fiduciary duty to keep ACA in good standing by meeting the legal requirements of a nonprofit, conducting our business, and protecting our finances. So, although they have great responsibility, our trustees are unpaid volunteers. There you go. Trustees must be ratified yearly, is which what we're doing here today. Trustees serve 2-year terms and they may serve up to 3 terms. And our trustees volunteer from 8 to 20 plus hours per week. And our board makes decisions using the group conscience, using the principles of our ACA steps, traditions, and concepts of service. So, in the nominating committee, we vet candidates to the Board of Trustees. And how do we do this? Well, we're always searching for board candidates and we advertise monthly for board openings. Basically, we need 2 to 5 trustees every year, new trustees every year, to maintain our board as they rotate off of service. We receive applications. All members must apply to be considered for nomination. We vet candidates through interviews with them and their references. And then candidates who meet their qualifications are nominated by the board. So here's the qualifications. This first paragraph is an exact copy from the OPPM, and I'm going to read it in full. The following are the desired qualifications that board candidates should meet before being considered for the position of trustees, OPPM Section 2L. This applies to both at-large and regional candidates, so everyone. So I'm going to abbreviate the rest for time purposes. So if you want the whole, you can go to that section in the OPPM. But one, at least 5 years of attendance at ACA meetings. Two, 1 or more years of active service on a WSO committee. 3, attendance at least 2 out of the 4 WSO board meetings with the fellowship. And 4, working knowledge of the ASA steps, traditions, and concepts of service, and grounded understanding of the group conscience process. 5, may not hold a similar position in another 12-step fellowship. 6, demonstrated skill working in a group and completing projects. 7, ability to donate substantial time. 8, willingness to abide by and sign the WSO commitment to service, conflict of interest policy, and the non-disclosure agreement. And 9, agree to protect confidential information during being trustee service and after leaving the board. And demonstrated emotional sobriety and effectiveness during conflict and honoring minority opinions. And 11, strong organizational and communication skills. And at the end, it says, note, the nominating committee can ask the board to consider exceptions to these desired qualifications. Such a request and the reason for the exception will be submitted in writing to the boards. So, yes, we can make exceptions, but there is never an exception for a lack of emotional sobriety or being grounded in our steps, traditions, and concepts of and group conscience, excuse me. So, to make these decisions, the NomCom members must have these same qualifications, except the time commitment is significantly less. Our vetting process is almost identical, and currently we have one opening. And I know I just gave you a lot of information, and everything I shared can be found on our NomCom webpage, which we'll put on in chat. And then the next two sections will give you the opportunity to meet our trustees and then to ask questions during the Q&A. And we've made some changes from last year. So I'm going to first share how we're conducting the Q&A and how to submit your questions. Then I'll circle back to the end of the session, and then we'll go straight to the Q&A. Okay. So first, I'm going to share why we have some ground rules, what they are, and how to submit your questions. I am committed that the Q&A will be emotionally safe for our trustees and delegates, our observers, and those who will be listening to the recording. This is critical because after a difficult ratification at the 2022 ABC, we went for 21 months without receiving any applications for the board. During that time, we had 7 trustees step down from service with no one to take their place. That left our ACA fellowship with only 3 trustees in January of 2024, a critically low level. So I'm using the same safety protocols as the last two ABCs. This allows us to continue to create a balanced environment where necessary questions can be asked, but the tone is respectful and emotionally safe. For the life of our program, it is important that this ratification process today does not keep anyone from considering board service now or in the future. This year, my fellow NomCom member, Erin D, will be assisting me. So, Erin, would you please raise your hand? And I believe she is already unmuted. So here are the ground. Oh, there she is. So as chair of the NomCom, I will facilitate the process. 2, we will have a total of 15 minutes for delegates' questions and 1 minute answers from our trustees. And questions should be neutral and businesslike and designed to elicit information. And keep in mind that trustees only have 1 minute to respond. If you're not a native speaker of English, please send questions translated. And if you're not able to, we will translate them for you. If the question may violate the stated ground rules or traditions, we may refer the question to the parliamentarian before being considered. And 4, since the 2024 ABC, there have been 11 opportunities for 11, delegates to meet our board and ask questions. So today we are prioritizing the questions of our newer delegates and for those who have had fewer times to speak today. So, for example, here's how we'd like you to submit write your questions. Please help us by writing first time or second time delegate at the beginning of your question. Please write the approximate number of times you've spoken today. And you may ask one trustee your question, so please specify which trustee your question is for. Otherwise, it will be random. And you will send your questions directly to Aaron D in chat. And Aaron will be accepting questions during the panel discussion. So that, therefore, they'll be ready for me to go right into the Q&A. So Aaron will order the questions and will forward them to me, and I'll read them with all your information. So now, let's see. Now back to, let's see. Oh, each of our trustees have been vetted and meet the qualifications. We have provided a service biography for you to read and learn about each trustee's ACA service work, their training and work experience, and a paragraph about them. You can find the board service bios in three different places: in today's agenda under board ratification, in the committee reports, they're linked to the NomCom committee report, and they're always on the NomCom webpage. And you might consider reviewing the bios during the panel discussion or before you vote. So would our board members please raise your digital hand so that we can find you? And then while we're doing that, our board members that you're about to meet are dedicated to their ACA recovery and doing service. Together, they have 138 years in ACA recovery, 72 years in intergroups, 3 years in regions, 67 years in WSO committees, and 17 and a half years on the board. So, without further ado, let's begin. So, Al comes to us from Illinois, USA, and he has 36 years in ACA recovery. A fun fact about Al is that he helped organize and chaired the 2014 ABC in Bannockburn, Illinois. You were a trustee for the Great Lake. You were a trustee for the West Great Lakes Intergroup. What is your experience of the difference of being a trustee at the WSO level? And what do you see as ACA's greatest challenge?
Thank you, Denise, for those questions. The differences that I see in being a intergroup trustee versus a WSO trustee is the time commitment. You've already outlined what the time commitment is for World Service. For West Great Lakes, being a trustee was more like 2 to 3 hours per month. So definitely a time change commitment. I think the other big difference is that with World Service, we have a dual responsibility, not only as a spiritual board member, but also for business management. Since there are international publishing hubs that provide the fellowship needed literature. So I think that kind of sums it up briefly from my point of view. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Okay, timer, would you please give an extra 30 seconds to Alyssa as English is not her first language? Okay, so Alyssa is next. Alyssa comes to us from Moscow, Russia, and has been in ACA for 8.5 years. Alyssa, you have a job and live in a time zone that is 7 hours later than Eastern Standard Time when most trustee meetings are held. What could you share with other international members considering WSO service on how to manage time and language challenges?
Hi, everyone. It's true. Now it's 7 hours difference, and half of the year it's 8 hours difference, which is good actually, because I can work and then I can do my trustee duties. Sometimes I feel a little bit exhausted because my Well, colleagues, they're fresh and tidy, and I'm like, okay, here is my evening hours, and I maybe would prefer sometimes to have some rest. But still, it's online, and I chose to be a part-timer, so it's a little bit easier for me, and well. Nobody like going for me like do this and this, so it's not like I should do some tasks immediately. Sometimes they are urgent, but well, I can handle with that. So I guess it's good that I have such a difference in time. I'm a part-timer. Yeah, I should work to earn money and yeah, this is online, so it's easier. And I learned well English from my childhood. So, well, I make jokes that I would prefer to understand less because, well, ACA all over the world, well, has the same issues. Well, yeah, but I'm quite good with English. So I guess please join. Yeah, I think that it will be just wonderful if we would have a board with members, with trustees all over the world. Just beautiful. So come join me. Thank you.
Thank you, Alyssa. Hey, Dove is next. Dove comes to us from Arizona, USA, and has been in ACA for 8 years. Dove, you are one of the members of the Safety Resource Committee who helped develop the service norms document. Would you please share about what the service norm document is and how have you experienced it working for members and groups?
Thanks, Denise. The goal of the service norms document is not to eliminate differences, but to support the resolution of conflicts in a healthy manner, referencing our program tools. The service norms document can be found, I believe, on the acawso.org website, and putting in the little search bar service norms document. The Safety Resources Committee, I think around 4 years ago, started pulling together resources that could be applied to our personal recovery or for ACA groups for their safety and recovery, as well as resources that would be available to our committees doing WSO work. For committees, these resources may help the committees as they navigate through sometimes difficult situations. For each of us personally, there are resources addressing our physical safety, our emotional safety, and for those times when we find ourselves activated. It's a lengthy read, but it is well worth the effort. I personally am really hoping that more committees and fellow travelers and meeting groups will take the time to look through this document and begin using the resources to assist in recovery and in making their group and committee life, a more pleasant and smooth experience. I believe that it's important to note that this document is expected to grow as we find or have members send us possible additions to the list. I can tell you from personal experience, the board begins every board meeting with 10 minutes of practicing the I feel statement that's listed in the resources. We do it to help us in bettering our communications with one another. And that in turn actually makes working together more satisfying and less complicated. So that's what I have.
Thank you, Dove. Okay, Jim. Jim comes to us from New York, USA, and he has 12 years in ACA. Jim, here's your question. Jim, you have attended the ABCs since 2016, and you assembled the delegates' guidebook for at least five of those business meetings from 2017 to 2021. What have you recognized in the evolution of the ABC during those years?
Thank you, Denise. Yes, the ABC has changed a lot over those years, and I see that we have grown. In 2016, at my first conference, the number of attendees and delegates and other participants was less than 40 ACA members. We sat around a rectangular arrangement of tables, and all the business material was printed and placed into a three-ring binder. Today, we have well over 140 registered participants, and the experience is entirely online and digital. I see we are diverse. We arrive from different backgrounds, yet have the same common challenges and hopes. This variety of experience and this diversity of people and views gives our fellowship its strength. This strength is fluid and it's not fixed. I see we are professional. Many of our volunteers bring special abilities. Among other talents, we have members who have legal backgrounds, accounting knowledge, and management skills. Also, we as an organization are confident. We are a confident and capable member of the world of 12-step recovery, and we learn from and support our sister recovery programs. I see we have matured, and at our World Services, we work together, grow together, play together. We display tolerance and sobriety. No one person or faction seeks to dominate another. I see we are spiritual. Our group conscience expresses the loving authority and direction of our higher power. Through continued prayer and meditation, we find our group purpose. We are all but trusted servants. I see we are open to creative solutions. We are not afraid to grow, to learn, to welcome, to change. We are mindful of rigidness and of being rooted in a sense of knowing. We avoid being certain. To quote Robert Harris, the author of Conclave, certainty is the great enemy of unity. And I will remind us that unity is our number one tradition. The longer I have had the privilege to participate in World Service, the more I witness the evolution of our organization. And as I witness our growth, I see confident, collaborative, and caring future. Thank you for considering me as a trustee.
Thank you, Jim. I'm just going to remind all delegates to send your questions to Erin D. Oh, actually, she's listed. Want to put your hand up again, Erin, so people could keep it up. NomCom questions D. There. So send them to Erin, not to me. Okay, our next person is Kaz, and Kaz is our newest trustee and comes to us from Washington, USA. Kaz has 11 years in ACA recovery. So, Kaz, you were an attorney and a professional negotiator. In addition, you have been on a nonprofit board in a leadership position. How has your experience helped you prepare for serving on the ACA board during the current changes and challenges?
Thank you much. I'll have to say that the last board that I was on was for a homeowners association, which some people are familiar with as having a bad reputation for cooperation and efficiency. It was different from the usual in that we had 7,000 residents in our community. It was the fourth largest community in the county. And we had a huge budget. So it was also going through a time of incredibly rapid change from a very casual style of operation and management to needing a much more rigorous and systematic form of management. And we managed to implement that over the 8 years that I worked with them, six on the board. So I think I'm fully comfortable with the various problems that we face in ACA. Bass.
Thank you, Kaz. Okay, next comes Ken. Ken comes to us from Ohio, USA, and he has 6 years in ACA. So, Ken, as the chair of the audit committee, you are well versed in our fellowship's finances. What do you see as ACA's future needs, and what special workers would get us there?
Thank you, Denise, and good afternoon, one and all. My name is Ken, and my board anniversary date is May 14th. So happy anniversary to me. But last year, one of the very first things I did was to go to the ABC, and it was a great introduction to the organization and the things and the challenges that are ahead. As we heard today, managing change. Things are different today than they were 5 years ago, 1 year ago, and they're going to continue to change and be different. I've been fortunate enough from last year's ABC to get involved in the fellowship group voting and working with other members. While it's somewhat been shepherded through by the board, about two-thirds of it really came from membership, as we're trying to come up with the language and approach that is going to be successful. And I enjoy that type of activity. As we look at the organization, we need, the reality is yes, we're a service group, but we're also a business, and we're a nonprofit business. But we need to make sure we're running the business well. So, we need, special workers, not necessarily that you have to have a degree in finance or marketing or those type of things, but you have to have a willingness to work with our special workers and to help us do our job better, to be looking ahead of what can we do today to make tomorrow better. Because that's our challenge. In private business, you often hear the comment, the only thing I do about today is apologize. I got to manage you tomorrow. That's really no different than a nonprofit. We need to be looking ahead and saying, how can we reach out, and how can we overcome the time changes? How can we overcome the language issues? And how can we help each other be successful? And more importantly, since we're all adult children, so how can we help our brothers and sisters know that they're not alone? Help them know that they're loved. Help them know that they're the only people. You're not the only people that have had these experiences. I love the saying that children are raised, but adult children are forged. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, Rich. Rich comes to us from New Mexico, USA, and this is Rich's 39th year in his ACA recovery. And Rich, your question has two parts. So you currently serve as the chair of Hospitals and Institutions Committee. What are the similarities and differences in carrying the messages to hospitals and institutions as opposed to meetings in general? And Are there any guidelines or restrictions in carrying the ACA message into the hospitals and institutions?
Thanks, Denise. Hey, everybody. And I'm having internet issues again. So if you can't hear me, let me, somebody wave and I'll turn my camera off. So the second question is the easiest, and I'll probably have to ask you to repeat the first one. The second part is if you're taking an H&I meeting into an institution, every institution is going to have its own set. Can you not hear me? Every institution is going to have its own set of guidelines, and you have to follow that institution's guidelines. If I remember correctly, the first part of the question was the differences between regular ACA meetings and H&I meetings. And again, it's a fairly quick, easy answer. Whereas in a regular ACA meeting, they can either be open or closed, right? Open meeting, everyone's invited. Closed meeting, like a woman's meeting, closed meeting for women. Hospitals and institution meetings are always closed. Just by the nature of them, they can't be an open meeting where anyone can come in, because the hospital or the institutions require you to be go through an orientation process and get credentialed. So that's the one. Hospital institution meetings are always closed. And the other big one is that H&I meetings don't observe the seventh tradition, right? If you're in a jail, you're not going to pass the hat to collect money, because the meeting is not self-funded, however the term is, self-sufficient, right? So we don't observe a seventh tradition in H&I meetings. And Public Service H&I Committee it has done a couple workshops on getting an H&I meeting into your local area. I'm always willing to talk to people, which happens quite a bit, how to set up an H&I meeting in your local area. And the other thing that I think is going to be really helpful, Public Service H&I Committee is going to, not a trifle, but just a little quick checklist of the things that you need to do to start an H&I meeting. And I think that'll be really helpful. And with that, I pass.
I have a quick question, please. I'm getting some questions, but they're not telling me how many times they've been a delegate, and we'll be doing the questions in that order. So if you haven't done that, please check your question to me and let me know. Thank you.
Thanks, Erin. Okay. So next is Sue. Sue V comes to us from Toronto, Canada, and she has 15 years in ACA recovery. So, looking back on your time as trustee and board chair, how have you navigated the balance between spiritual principles and business responsibilities? And what insights or lessons on that journey have offered you about leadership, service, or personal growth?
Thank you, Denise. Can you hear me okay, everyone? All righty. I love that question. So I would say to you, when I came in to World Services and on the board, and still the same, I came in with the understanding that this is a 12-step, 12-tradition organization, a spiritual organization, and that has principles such as carrying the ACA message, as most of you know, I'm quite passionate about around the world. And also with traditions, it's the collective group conscience, which I love, because there's such wisdom in that, whether it be in the conference or in the committees or even on the board, in the boardroom, it's all the same. We have that. And so for me, the spiritual principles are the foundation, the core, the heart. The business side of pieces is how we get some things done. How can we maximize the carrying the ACA message around the world? And so I'm always asking the question, where's the fellowship? Where's the core principle? How are we doing it from a business perspective that can be spiritually based, affordable, accessible? And I think of that as publishing chair. As you, many of you know, I'm the committee chair for the publishing committee, and working with all the international fellowships around the world on this. And I do this in the board, everything that we're doing from my in the board committees, bringing in, how are we serving the fellowship? Well, how can we serve them better? Project management, standardizing procedures, automation, all sorts of creative, innovative solutions. And so first step is always spiritual. Second step is always the business side. How are we able to leverage that in a fair and equitable way? And when I think of even the conference, all the discussions that are going on, what's the spiritual principle? Oh, concepts, traditions, the collective group conscience of our fellowship, our groups, our delegates here. And from a business side is how do we help support that? Whether it's IT support that we're having staff do, or it's something else. So it's really balancing it, but not to forget that the heart, the core, is always the spiritual piece. At least that's for me, and I believe for all board members. I think, what have I learned? My insights? Oh my, there's so many. But in the short time I have with you, I would say to you, it's brought me to a deeper place of recovery and healing. And as most of us know, that's not always painless. Sometimes it's a bit painful. But I am grateful for that, because I have my loving parent, I have my higher power, and I have some wonderful, talented, and gifted board members, committee members, delegates, volunteers that I'm grateful for. The other one I would say, perfectionism's been knocked out of me. I'm going to finish. And it's more GMO, good enough, move on. And the next last thing I would just say, patience, patience. Don't reach out for the easiest way out. And it's not always easy with the challenges in the world. But that's where I'm grounded. And I would appreciate being ratified for one more year. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. And last but not least is Tamara. And she comes to us from South Carolina, and she has 13 years in ACA. So Tamara, you have been a project manager for the last 23 years. What project manager skills have supported your service on the executive board in the roles of secretary and treasurer, and how could those skills benefit committees?
Thank you. That's a great question. I actually looked at the question more as how did it benefit my board work, which includes committees, but also other things. I would say I've now been a project manager for 25 years, because 1.5 years ago was 23 when I was working at a corporation. And what I found is that the skills that I practiced there are natural skills for me, but that I see them so much more clearly in this work, because when you're in a corporation as a project manager, there are certain things that you just do and that's your job and you just do them and you don't think about them. It's when I came here and not everybody's a project manager that I was able to see, oh, look, I can bring structure to the communication and I can bring a framework that helps us through, to even see that a project needs to be started, but I can help build a framework that makes it so that we can be thoughtful and considerate about how we get to a solution and get to a solution that really takes in the collective conscience, I'll call it. We don't call it that in the corporation, but the similarity is that when I was in the corporation and I was, I would sort of write things or train things or whatever. And I always said, how is the frontline representative who's answering the phone call? How are they going to hear this? What are they going to say is missing? And now when I've been doing this work, it's been exciting and fun because I say, how is the fellowship going to hear this? Somebody in a meeting group, what are they going to say is missing? And I get to build for that. And I get to help others build for it too, the people in the committees, but also the people on the board. Each of the board members brings different skills, and it was really fun for me. It was really empowering for me to see, like, oh, you've got some unique skills that other people don't have. You know how you go around like, oh, everybody knows how to do that. Well, no. And then everybody doesn't. We all have unique skills that are personal to us, and it's been really fun. So what I brought is allowing us to have clarity, for us to know our roles, to encourage people to contribute. My personal skill is being able to really listen to people and to break down complex topics and concepts, and then talk with them so that we all understand it, right? So we come to this common shared understanding of what we need to do going forward. So it's been my honor to do this for the last 4 years. If ratified, I will be in my third term. I'm excited. I've been the secretary for most of that and treasurer for half of it. And it's my honor to do it with all of you. I had two of my young ones here this morning and they looked at my screen. They only saw one screen of all your pictures. And then I said, there's five more screens. And they're like, that's so many people. That's so cool. And I was like, yeah, it's super cool. So thank you.
Thank you, Tamara.
Okay. Once again, I just want to mention, I have three questions that have not given me how many times they've been a delegate. So if anybody that has written to me can please check. You should have a message back from me. Thank you.
And then, Aaron, when once they get back with you, if you'll send those to me. So
yeah, I need about a minute. Yeah.
So it's time for our, well, I guess I'll find out how much, because we started a little bit early today. I was surprised. So how much time do we have? Timer for the rest of this section. Okay, thank you. And then 15 minutes will be put up for, great. I was just thinking, Aaron, if you wanted to ask the first one, and that didn't. We decided to do it this way because last year.
First question is for Dove. Why did you decide to accept the position as a board member?
Oh, Aaron, can you say who sent that and what group they're from?
Let's see. First time. Marilyn M. from IG9.
It was sort of a difficult process for me because I kept thinking, what do I have to offer? What do I have to offer? I don't understand. But my higher power said, yeah, I'd like for you to do that. And the reason I went ahead and did it is my hope has always been that I could be the eyes and ears of the fellowship and be that bridge between fellowship and board so that I never forget I'm an adult child. I don't ever want to forget that. And so I hold it as really important to what's important to the fellowship and what's in the best interest of the fellowship. Then I also had to learn about the WSO side of it and how and navigating both of those. Thank you.
Thank you, Dove. Aaron, want to go ahead and ask the next one?
I will. So can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm on a different screen here. So this is from a second time delegate. This first one is, we have a couple from second time, from Stefan, who didn't send me his information, but Second time as a delegate. I'm not sure which group it is at the moment. Do you have any theories or strategies to achieve greater participation or involvement from membership and groups? And that's too open for anyone.
Hey, Jim?
Hi, sorry, I was muted. Yeah, you know, when I look back on my service in WSO, but even like in intergroups, it was really kind of a tap on the shoulder, or someone saying, you know, I think you'd really be good at this, or, hey, we're having fun. Do you want to join in? And so I think that that really applies to this question, like how to get more involvement. And so I think the strategy would be to get to know people one-on-one, see what they're doing, what they're about, get to know people. And if I felt that they were a worthwhile candidate for the board, or to, you know, maybe start an intergroup, or just get more involved in service in general, that would be how, you know, I would approach it. But it's so singular. It's really hard to qualify. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, I'm going to send you one more, and then I'm going to be sending you this document, Denise. Okay, so another second time delegate from Rich E. for dagnabbit, California 648. It's too rich about H&I, hospital and institutions. How are patients or inmates encouraged to seek guidance with working the 12 steps with a sponsor or otherwise?
That's a great question. So it's really like so many, right? Tradition four, every group is autonomous. So even in H&I meetings, I've heard of some meetings where it's basically a discussion meeting only. And here in Albuquerque, before COVID, we took a meeting out to the jail here for, I don't know, 12, 15 years, and it was discussion only. And the reason for that is there wasn't a, so first off, there'd be 50, 60 men in the room, and there wasn't the institution's policies. There was not the capability for us to bring in a workbook and work people through that. So that was our choice. We just kept it as a discussion meeting. Working through the yellow workbook in an H&I meeting is challenging. I've not heard of a lot of people doing that. I know there was a group in Boston for a period of time that tried. I don't know how successful it was. So I hope that made sense. It's really pretty much up to the group that takes the H&I meeting in. What I always suggest is start it out as a discussion group first, get their interest, and then if enough people really want to do the yellow workbook, see if you can, getting the workbooks is not an issue. WSO will send you all the workbooks that you want to the institution if the individuals request it. But the institution has to be okay with us breaking up into smaller groups. Anyway, I hope that made sense. Pass.
Thank you, Rich.
It seems like it might be that it's too long to send to you, Denise.
how about send it to me in Slack?
Okay. Okay. And meanwhile, I'll give another question here from second time delegate. Again, from Stefan. I don't have delegate. Open for any all to answer. I don't have a delegate count, but every ABC QDM since Zoom 9-10. I'm not sure what that question is. So if you want to send me more clarification on that question, and I will read the next one, which is a fourth time delegate from Region 6, Corbeil. And this is for Dove again. Thank you for all you do. I really appreciate the dedication to ACA. What is your position on delegates having input on the literature prices, office staff descriptions, and salaries? Unless we want to go to a different question. I'm sorry. No, that's right. A different delegate. Never mind. Delete that thought. That was good.
Okay. Delete what thought?
You answer. Go ahead, please.
Okay. The pricing is done because of things that are beyond anyone's control. The pricing goes by, we do have to make a profit, and we also have to keep in mind what inflation is doing to us. So the pricing, I think, has to be managed by WSO. And I'm sorry, I've forgotten, what are the other pieces of that for
staff salary?
So office staff and salaries. Again, I think that has to be managed by WSO, because what we do is we've gotten benchmarking. So we look across the industry for whatever position it is and the qualifications, and where does this person fit into the salary that we could offer them. I'm one of those people that I kind of believe if I want the best employees, I need to be very mindful of making sure I'm offering a salary that is going to get that really great person. And we have been blessed with getting some of the best people. So I personally am very proud of that. And very happy with that. I hope that answers.
Thank you, Dov. Okay, so this next question, I just lost my place. Here we go, is from TEL0341, Kelly. This one is for Kaz. He only has 1 minute to answer, so I'm gonna make this shorter. It says, one of the consistent problems with HOA boards are a lack of transparency. I know by experience, like yourself, how do you intend to be transparent in serving the fellowship? Will you provide direct answers when asked or go silent? And do you feel that asking questions is problematic when the questions might be seen as challenging?
Well, the second question is the easiest. No, I don't think that they are problematic. I would expect and hope that they be somewhat respectful. I'm a human being, and I'm definitely an adult child. So I don't like it being triggered, but sometimes you get triggered. Transparency. I always believed in it. What I found frustrating was that in my prior role was that the very full and legally compliant information that we did, in fact, provide and make openly available to everybody who wanted to look at it was simply not looked at or was rejected as being a lie, despite the fact that it was fully affirmed by our accounting staff and by our accounting reviewers and our corporate counsel. So you can't make a horse drink even if you provide the water. Yes.
Thank you, Kaz. Okay, here's a 10-time delegate since 1990s. I'm sorry, I don't have the name. From WEB381, this is for Sue V. How long have you been on the board and how long have you been chair? And given the principle of rotation and the well-being of the board when your 6 years are completed, and thank you for your leadership, When are you turning the chair position over so you can give direction and support to the new chair? And who is the heir apparent? So there's a lot in there.
All right, there's a lot in there, and I have a minute. I would say I'm in my fourth year, so if I get ratified, I'll be in my fifth year. And I'm in my third and final year as chair. As per our bylaws and OPPM, the board chair serves for 3 years. And so we'll be having elections in June, so I can't tell you who's going to be it because we need to have an election in June. However, I would say I am a big believer, and my track record is about service rotation. I have always rotated my service roles, even in the meeting groups, as my intergroup in global, and now in the board. So I'm all about that, and I'm all about mentoring and helping position people for success, however they choose to want that. I don't force anything on them, but I'm here if they need it. And I've been working very hard to help build, co-create a board that is friendly, collaborative, and asks each other tough questions so that we can get the best information. Thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Sue. Okay, this one is from a first-time delegate, which is what we were hoping for. This one is IG, I think IG 075 or, oh, in IN, Indiana. 075, Becky. Okay. What is the best way for a single meeting to join an intergroup? I know we've got a lot of experience on the board in intergroups. So, which one of you would like to take that? What is the best way for a single meeting to join an intergroup?
I'm going to go, Tamara.
Tamara has her hand up.
Yeah, I mean, every meeting should have a group representative, and those group representatives can attend their intergroup meetings, which are generally monthly. Mine has been monthly, and it's just a great way to know what the intergroup is working on for their meetings and to support the intergroup in that, because I found when I was chair of an intergroup or part of one, we didn't have the people. We just said, well, what do the people want? So we'll do what we think the people want. But it took us 5 years to get some considerable participation. So just go and call them and ask them what they need.
Oh, okay. Jim, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just add that I would suggest that people create their own intergroup. Three meetings getting together and saying, hey, we're an intergroup. That's all it takes at this time. So you can find a way to support one another and reach out even to other meetings. So don't discount that opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, and Al?
Got them mute now.
Can someone unmute Al, please?
Al's going to have to give us.
Okay, found my voice. Thank you. I just wanted to add to what Tamara said and said my experience through the groups, through intergroup, and now WSO is we're stronger together. And so people who take on the responsibility of being delegates and attend various meetings and go to intergroup meetings, that's the way to hang out with your fellow travelers and find out what's going on in the next group. Thank you.
Denise, I'm sending you another first-time delegate question just now.
Okay. All right. CA1465, Sunny. For any trustee, and just one, because we don't have the time, how has serving on the board helped your recovery or challenged your recovery?
Pass? Or, oh, Alyssa's up first.
Alyssa.
Alyssa.
Yeah, I can share a bit. I would require for my additional time, as English is not my first language. I'm always like this privilege. Okay. So I guess I've never imagined myself having this position. Well, like it's honestly, and I would never see myself in any leader position. So it was a cup of tea of my dad. He was, cool businessman, like, real boss, not me. I always avoided it, and I actually, well, I think I rejected and I refused to see the other sides of myself. And when I'm trying to do such steps, I'm like, oh, I know something else about me, what a real person, what a real me I am. So this is, I think, a gift of the program, to know what a person, what a personality I really have. So I would underline this and maybe some time for Kaz to answer as well. Thank you.
Let me check. I think we're almost out of time. How are we doing, Corbett? Time? So I'd like to just make my closing. So thank you all for your questions. Thank you, trustees, for your answers. And I hope this has been helpful for you to be ready to cast your ratification vote later today. Well, that's my timer. And I will close with one simple request that everyone here can do. Please be kind and respectful to our trustees because just like you, they are adult children and it helps sustain them. I'm also asking because by witnessing kindness and respect towards our trustees, some of you may be inspired to consider trustee service someday. The future of ACA literally depends upon it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for Denise. Thank you, Denise, for being our nom-com mom.
Thank you, Denise. And now I guess it's time for the ratification votes. We're going to do them one at a time, I assume. So, Brad, do you have it prepared?
No, ratification votes go on worldwide voting tonight.
Okay, thanks. Well, that's all we have then.
I don't mean tonight. I mean after today's meeting. I realize it's not everybody's night, but after today's meeting, we'll have it ready in 2 hours.
Will that be within an hour or 2 hours after the meeting closes?
We say 2 hours, but we've always beat that by quite a good margin. But it'll be done within 2 hours. But if we follow our record, it'll be pretty quick.
Okay, thank you, Brad. We appreciate you.
We do.